Welcome to the Spectrum Policy Podcast, brought to you by Policy Tracker, which provides news, research, and training about spectrum management. This episode looks at light communications, which consists of a range of methods to transmit data on visible or invisible light. We'll be focusing on one form of light communication, LiFi, which stands for light fidelity. My name is Mira Villa, and I'm a journalist here at Policy Tracker. With me here is Harald Haas, a distinguished professor of mobile communications at the University of Strathclyde and a co-founder of Pure LiFi. He coined the term LiFi over a decade ago now and continues to be one of the pioneers of this technology. Thank you so much for coming, Harald.
Thank you for having me.
So this technology is not as widespread today as the use of radio frequencies, which is something that we at Policy Tracker cover a bit more of, but it does have a surprisingly long history. Even inventor Alexander Graham Bell, who is credited with patenting the first telephone, also created a photophone, which was transmitting sound by sunlight. So it's quite an old invention in a way. You have been working on this on LiFi for about 2 decades now. What got you first interested in visible light communications as a technology?
Thank you very much for that question. Indeed, light communication has been around a long time, and I think Alexander Graham Bell was hugely proud of the photophone. So I am by training a wireless communications engineer, and I've worked in the wireless industry since 1995 on radio communications, and I've been working in the industry for a long time, in Siemens, for example. And I followed sort of the different paradigm shifts in cellular from analog voice then to digital voice and then to digital multimedia. And that was around the transition from 2G to 3G, where I think it was pretty clear, although the smartphone didn't exist at that time, it was clear that the mobile computer, the mobile internet is becoming more predominant in the future. But then we have in radio, we have always the problem of finding new spectrum, a new spectrum for new systems, new spectrum for 3G, you know, for 4G. So it'll be quite expensive spectrum at times. And I mean, the prediction then was if the demand for mobile internet is really exponentially increasing and the spectrum is sort of almost constant, we are running into a problem which is called a spectrum crunch. That's been following us for a long time, and people say, when is the spectrum crunch really coming? I guess when you think of this as a binary event, it probably will never come. It's a gradual degradation of mobile services that we've been seeing and accepting for many, many years. And this is where 20 years ago, I thought, okay, we need to do something else. We need to look at other spectra, and the optical spectrum was a good example of a good opportunity, especially around 2000, the white LEDs came out that provided sort of LED lighting. And with that LED lighting, there was the opportunity to piggyback data on light. That's how it came about, the spectrum crunch, and then curiosity driven, what can we do with LED lights? And we've then driven the technology from simple modulations to more sort of sophisticated data modulation into building complex systems and build very, very exciting prototype since.
And let's get into a bit more in detail in how this technology really works. So can you just explain it in a bit more detail?
So yes, so we use current light sources. They can be used for illumination. They can be used for data communication for various different purposes. And we encode data in the changes of the intensity of the light. It is like your flickering light that basically gets high brightness, lower brightness, changes the illumination level. And that changes in the illumination level is then captured by a detector in a smartphone, in a receiver, and then use that decodes the data streams that's behind these variations in intensity. And it's called intensity modulation direct detection. And basically all light sources can be run according to the same principle.
Something that you've just mentioned now and something that You've also talked in the past in the TED talk that you presented on LiveWire technology about a decade ago. Yeah. Is the possibility of this technology to make use of existing infrastructures, mm-hmm. such mm-hmm. as, you know, the prevalence of all these light sources yeah. that we have in our daily life? So is that something that you still see as yeah. a very relevant?
Absolutely.
Approach?
I mean, that's one of the key advantages. The OPEX, the CAPEX for mobile networks is a major concern. So we can use and we want to use existing infrastructures as well. But before I go into that, I wanted to add one piece of information around the flicker. It's not like it's a flashlight. It's very, the flicker is so high that the human eye won't see any changes in the light intensity. Only the detector can. So it's a constant illumination light. And now coming back to your question about infrastructure, yes, we see that sort of the indoor illumination environment, so all your light bulbs in your ceiling can become gigabit data transmitters, or all your street lights that are already there can be your 6G base stations providing gigabit data access to them for the metaverse application on the streets, if you want. Or, for example, the car headlights or car taillights can be the transmitters and receivers for car-to-car communication and car-to-infrastructure communication. So really, everything that where you see a light at a moment, imagine a city with all the lights, every light that already is out there can be turned into a high-speed data node. And that really drives what we call the world sees as the metaverse and the ultimate connectivity of everything with everything.
That is quite, it sounds like something out of a sci-fi in a way, which I'm sure that people do hear a lot of. But, I'm very curious to know, what are these kind of current uses of this technology that already exist?
Yeah.
What sectors are there, if you can tell me about
that? So light has a very nice property. Light doesn't go through walls, right? If you have an opaque wall, it stays in that room. And therefore, it is less likely that people can eavesdrop Li-Fi signals, and it makes, therefore, the technology much more secure. That is one advantage. And the other advantage is that light can be controlled more deterministically. You can basically think about a laser pointer for your presentations. It's a very controlled pointer in a certain direction, and light wouldn't spread outside that pointer region. And so Li-Fi systems can be using that principle of controllability of the electromagnetic waves, and therefore it is much more secure. And therefore, there's a huge demand at the moment in the defense industry to use that technology. If you go to news outlets, you will find that Pure Li-Fi had a number of very big contracts with the U.S. Army Europe, and where this technology is now deployed on the ground in tactical environments. Because if you put it up in an operational theater that is mobile on the ground, and you put it inside there, no one from outside can intercept any signal transmission within this operational theater. Not even a drone flying close to it can intercept any signal. Whereas Wi-Fi can be easily detected. Sometimes you don't even need a drone to that. And we have seen reports that those vulnerabilities lead to fatal events. And that's why the U.S. Army has coined the term Li-Fi saves lives and missions. And that's for that reason. So that's where we see it starting. But we see it even now more being adopted also in the consumer world. Because if you do really want to have AR, VR headsets at really good sort of quality, so you're not getting seasick, you need a high data rate link. So anything between 5 gigabit to 10 gigabit is something that you ideally need. That's not available yet. And therefore, perhaps you haven't seen that large uptake of AR, VR headsets. And Li-Fi would be a enabling technology for really powerful AR, VR headsets. Again, and using the security features and also the multi-user features because of the controllability of the light beams makes it an ideal technology for those kind of new devices that will be entering the market. We start in a beachhead sort of defense, but now we see a strong ramp into the consumer world. So, and if I may add, the reason why this has now become a reality is that we also now have a standard. In order, in the consumer world, in the communications consumer world, in order to make things interoperable, you need a standard. And now there is that standard 802.11bb, which is part of the Wi-Fi family. But it's a Li-Fi standard, which virtually defines the use of light for indoor networking. And that really is unlocking huge potential for using that technology.
Yes, that was going to be one of my questions. So there is this new standard, as you mentioned, 802.11bb. Mm-hmm. I understand that there's also an ITU-based standard for indoor visible light communications. From your perspective as someone who is building these technologies, building a business in this industry, can you just elaborate a little bit more on what kind of role does it play in getting that technology out there to have these kind of recognized global standards?
I think there's one very important aspect in the consumer world is cost. And especially in a smartphone, the estate that is available there is very, very limited. So if you want to introduce a new piece of silicon, a huge piece of silicon into a smartphone, that's a major investment. And that's why we have been very strongly advocating 802.11bb, because that is exactly what is not needed to make that technology work. 802.11bb uses existing Wi-Fi chipsets. And uses this, the Wi-Fi, what is called medium access protocol, and all the security features that Wi-Fi offers, such as encryption or authentication, that is all embedded, inherited, and we use the same physical layer. But what is added is a signal conditioning device that takes the RF signal that's coming out of the Wi-Fi chip and turns it into a Li-Fi signal, and that is a that's a translator, if you want, that is added, and that makes Li-Fi work within Wi-Fi. So basically bypassing the very crowded Wi-Fi spectrum so that the Wi-Fi spectrum is not used, but we move it into the Li-Fi spectrum. And by the way, I forgot to say that the light spectrum is 3,000 times larger than the entire radio spectrum at 300 gigahertz. In communications, we use about 1 gigahertz of spectrum together with Wi-Fi and all the cellular standards. This is basically 3,000 times more than the entire spectrum. So it is a huge opportunity for spectrum that we can use. And then basically move that crowded RF band into that huge available spectrum. I call it the ocean versus the swimming pool, spectrum volume availability. So that's how we do it, and that's why it's commercially viable, and the barriers for entry are significantly reduced.
I want to ask another question related to that, actually. Sure. In terms of this wide spectrum of light, do you face kind of similar challenges as RF users in terms of like adopting different kind of wavelengths to be used?
So the light spectrum is unregulated. It's free. So you can use everything from UV light, if you want, really up to the infrared, into the all optical bands. There's no regulation for using it in visible light. So that's the selection is then merely a question of eye safety, a question of availability of devices, a question of what you want to achieve with your system. And that governs sort of the selection of the spectrum bands. And we know that there's sweet spots for various applications within this huge range. And we just pick the one that we think is ideal. And obviously within the standard, it has to follow a certain spectrum range. And that is between 800 nanometers to 1,000 nanometers, or in the infrared. That's where sort of the 802.11bb lives in, and all systems have to comply with that band. But otherwise, there's a lot of degrees of freedom to be exploited in that spectrum domain. spectrum is in abundance, and that really makes that technology so powerful, because it really can future-proof wireless communications.
Great. And in terms of then, you know, this technology, you mentioned this, the new standard, which kind of makes Li-Fi, enables it to be a complementary service to Wi-Fi. Is that where you see its future, or something to be kind of used on its own as a standalone?
It is complementary, but also standalone as a powerful add-on. I mean, if you follow the discussion on your podcast, there is now really the demand for spectrum sharing, and there's a very sweet spot in RF frequencies, and it's the low to mid frequency band. So anything between one gigahertz to say 8 gigahertz, that's a sweet spot, because the channel propagates ideally for a mobile environment. But that is really crowded. There's hardly any spectrum left. So the question is, do we use it for cellular or do we use it for Wi-Fi? So that's that debate happening now, because, and that signifies the problem, right? That there is no enough spectrum in the usable region. So we bring in the Li-Fi and basically add where it is needed, helping to offload some of the bottlenecks that exist there in the RF domain, provided as a sort of a pressure valve for data rate. But because of the huge spectrum, we can do things that RF can't do. It in RF, to deliver 1 terabit per second, and that is sort of where 6G goes, you need, even if you think of a spectrum efficiency of 10 bits per hertz, you would need 100 gigahertz of bandwidth. You certainly won't find it in the 0 to 10 gigahertz, so you'd really need to go to sub-terahertz, and there's other challenges around A to D converters and power amplifiers and so on. But with Li-Fi, that is recently easily accomplishable. And we have shown it actually at the CES in 2022 with our industry partner Kyocera SLD. We have shown 100 gigabit per second with laser light. So that is all possible. So we really can deliver those 10 to 100 gigabit data rates in a time frame that is within the next sort of 5 to 6 years, I would imagine that such technology can be made commercially available.
Let's dive into that then. You know, making this commercially available, what are the key challenges of this technology? Because obviously, you know, it's not a silver bullet. There are some issues to overcome. How do you see what those are, and what can be done to overcome them?
So there's basically barriers. You could divide them into technical barriers and into commercial barriers. And I think we and many other groups in the world have done a lot of research that have shown that the technical barriers are basically gone. You don't need new materials. You don't need new science on new sort of principal technologies. That is not needed. It's all out there. You can use current wafer fabs and processes that all would deliver the devices that are needed. So technically, completely possible. It's a commercial sort of uptake. It's the industry that is, think about 5G. Think about the billions that have been invested in millimeter wave that has not made it sort of commercially through yet. So there's a lot of investment into RF technologies. And somehow these companies who have invested want to make that commercial return. So therefore, it's a the appetite to invest in something completely new in that regard is low, and that's a limitation. So we really want to see the people that basically can be abstracting from that limitation and really see the light, and I'm sorry for the pun, really see the opportunity to help us bring that technology to the fore. I mean, if you're talking about investments sort of between 50 and 100 million, really in big volumes to really scale that technology up. And this is a drop in the ocean compared to the investments in the RF world, right? But somehow there is that kind of investment and that belief in the technology needed by someone to really help us drive that breakthrough into making it scale up and bringing sort of the cost down by miniaturizing and scaling it up with the new silicon that need to be developed. So that's a commercial barrier. It's access to funds and someone really helping us drive that vision through to its glorious final destination.
So you're really calling me out from calling it a bit of a sci-fi technology in the beginning. What is needed is an attitude change.
Correct. We need believers and some people that really see the light and see that LiFi is not a TV remote control on steroids. We are not building a faster TV. We are building networks. We are building mobile networks. We are building sort of the capability for people to move while they have LiFi connection. And they don't have to point their device into the light source. It is ubiquitously available, and also building fast backhauls between sort of cell-free access points and others. I mean, that technology has so many applications, and it's really, really, really driven by that huge ocean of spectrum that is freely available. And that's a simple key. So what would be good to mention is that this technology is obviously has many use cases on the ground in a terrestrial setting. I mentioned sort of the home networking. 80% or 90% of all the traffic originates indoors and outdoors. And there would be an argument, why don't we use light for covering the indoor access and using the SCARS RF to cover outdoor applications over long distances where light wouldn't work. So that is one where it can be used. But we also see now the need to connect the unconnected, sort of the digital divide is a big, big challenge. The industry is looking at aerial platforms that connect and perform part of a network, or even satellite, LEO satellite communications to the ground. This can all be done in RF, but would need more spectrum. And then you come into the same question, which spectrum? And if you take it away into for satellite communications, then it wouldn't be available on the ground because of interference and others. So there's a question, a point, an opportunity to use that technology in that environment as well. And then I need to say as well, for underwater, we see more and more need to not only observe the oceans in terms of things around climate change, and I need to understand what that overall means, because oceans are such a vital parameter in all these changes. So there's wireless networks perhaps needed, sensor networks in oceans. Radio doesn't work at all. So light could be a solution for there as well. So it applies underwater, terrestrial, and in satellite communications. And then there's the other challenge that we are facing while I'm speaking about carbonization, is net zero. We have done a lot of research and built even systems that we've deployed where we've used ordinary solar panels that you put on your roof as LiFi detectors. So a solar panel can not only give you the energy to power your 6G base stations or 5G base stations, it can also at the same time act as a data receiver for high-speed data links in sort of gigabit region. And we've connected two homes on the island of Orkney in the north of Scotland with that technology using off-the-shelf solar panels. So we can combine energy harvesting with data reception as well with that technology, which is giving a big advantage towards net zero as well. I wanted to mention this as well. So the energy efficiency is something that is one of the advantages of the technology as well.
Yeah, that's definitely a key talking point also in the wider telecommunications industry. Yes. And we need to figure out ways to be more sustainable and use what's already out there.
Correct. So it's availability of spectrum, it's security, it's energy efficiency. And these are big points.
Great. All right. So many thanks for that chat, Harold. If you're interested in reading more about light communications, do take a look at our website where you can find recent reports on the subject. We always welcome your feedback and ideas for future episodes as well. Many thanks for listening to this edition of the Spectrum Policy Podcast, and remember to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. Thank you.